making TV special.
Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Brand new. Check 1, 2. Brand new music from the mighty Scottish instrumental band known as Mogwai. Their brand new 7th, I believe, record is amusingly titled Hardcore Will Never Die, But You Will. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this B-side episode 205 from MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, broadcasting live from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and an audio-video edition streaming live on Ustream. It's the morning of February 18th, 2011, and we're going to go through all the new alternative news in the Media Monarchy Kingdom. So let's get right to it, my friends. On the top of Media Monarchy right now is, of course, the latest episode of New World Next Week, my weekly video series with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. New World Next Week. .com. Three stories, 15 minutes, the weekly series. I'm so proud to be involved with it. Our three stories this week: amid reporters' assault in Cairo, Pentagon sued over rape cover-up, FCC announces nationwide presidential emergency alerts to be tested. We went over that in depth on the recent 205 episode. And our third story, Man versus Machine, the final solutions company destroying humans again. We're going to get into the first and third story on our upcoming live episode 206. But of course, that's the latest episode from NewWorldNextWeek.com. You can get high quality video, low quality video, audio version, and so much more. Latest episode from the aforementioned CorbettReport.com, episode 175, The Rand Corporation Exposed. What is a think tank, and how can a mere research institution actually shape the society it claims to be studying? This episode heads down into the nuclear bunker with the boys from RAND, which we learn stands for Research and Development. But we head down to unearth the secrets of the RAND Corporation, the research institution that has molded our world for the past 60 years. Of course, the latest other videos and alternative media from CorbettReport.com, the Sunday Update, everything is related, and another excellent standalone video, The Last Word on Overpopulation. We also have the latest from my man Richard Grove at TragedyandHope.com, the Peace Revolution podcast, peacerevolution.org, episode 17, Nonviolent Solutions for Everyday Situations. I can't recommend peacerevolution.org enough to you. And again, all these alternative media outlets are corporate free and survive and thrive with your support. I would wholeheartedly recommend you get a subscription to the TragedyandHope.com community. Lastly, for most of my favorite alternative media shows, GroundZeroMedia.org, Project Bluebeam, The Rise and Fall of the Neo-Skeptic. This episode gets into the UFO on the Dome of the Rock, and even the newborn child left there some days afterward. But it also gets into an angle that has not been covered very well, and that was the recent lockdown at Dugway Proving Ground. So GroundZeroMedia.org is your source for all this, the massive article on Project Bluebeam, as well as podcasts for you to get the episode. Clyde Lewis broadcasts live here in Portland, Oregon, every Sunday night on KUFO 101.1 FM, blasting alternative media out to a huge, huge audience. So again, a huge thanks and huge props to all those guys and all the gals, all the folks out there who help spread the word of independent, commercial-free, corporate-free alternative media. We'll hop to cyberspacewar.com with keeping with what we've already mentioned. We've got a couple posts giving you the history mystery of the cyberspace war. 1954, Eisenhower alien psyop. Fast forward to a new chapter highlighting a new article from Michael Sala of exopolitics.org. And the story of Eisenhower's supposed alien contact at Edwards Air Force Base. Furthermore, Percolobus, Nibiru, Nemesis, Planet X, or Tyche. UniverseToday.com article also sourcing The Independent and all around covering the space events. And again, the amazing thing that I love about having folks now helping post to some of the sites in the Media Monarchy Kingdom is now I'm learning things, but when it comes time to do the show here, I don't have my homework done because I didn't post this article. So I apologize for the times that I kind of stumble over some of these posts. And again, it's even news to me sometimes. But back on planet Earth and back in the cyber war, Algeria shuts down the net as protests mount. There were reports out of Algeria. The government deleted internet and Facebook accounts across the country, according to an article at The Telegraph. Quote, "The government doesn't want us forming crowds through the internet," said Rashid Salem of Coordination for Democratic Change in Algeria. This going back to last Sunday, February 13th. We'll blast down the list of headlines on cyberspacewar.com, posted up under the February 17th DEF CON cyber coup, backdoor, and track more. Cyber attack hits Canadian government computers. That was yesterday, February 17th. More on that from the BBC. And we go around the world now with geopolitics intrinsically being intertwined with the new cyberspace war. Threat level covering a report that says Egypt shut down the net with the big switch, with the kill switch, not with diplomacy and phone calls as was originally trumpeted. Voice of America uses social media to aid foreign dissent. You bet your ass they do. More on that from Danger Room, and we even referenced on the latest NewWorldNextWeek.com episode, Voice of America, a well-known intelligence-connected asset. And that's what they do. Propaganda. Surveillance footage and code clues indicate Stuxnet hit Iran. Just more documentation on that story, and we've laid it out pretty well that it was made by U.S. Real. CIA head Leon Panetta warns of possible cyber Pearl Harbor. Always using the same terminology, William J. Lynn III still urging partnership against cyber threat. That's from DefenseTalk.com. We reported on Lynn in the last couple of months, and he urging public and private sector to get into bed together as if they're not. DOD talks up plans to deploy Cyber Commandos 3.0. As we've been telling you here for years now, they want to fight the net. But we've got a bit from tarpley.net that goes into a lot of areas. And unfortunately, this isn't going to be the last time we're going to hear from Shillery in this weekend's episode. But discussing, just as we've said, now the intertwined geopolitics and cyberspace war, Hillary announces expanded U.S. cyber coup campaign.
All right, so here's one of those ironic twists of fate. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton gave a major speech today on internet freedom and why it's important to make sure those freedoms are available around the world. Meanwhile, just across the river, the U.S. government asked a federal judge to require Twitter to turn over confidential information about the use of its services by three people associated with WikiLeaks. So, if I understand this right, the U.S. government is championing freedom of information, except when it's in secret cables made public about the U.S. government. For more now, I'm joined by investigative journalist Webster Tarpley. And Webster, let me just lay out a couple different contrasts here. The U.S. government wants to train human rights workers to be able to take information off their phone if they're detained by police. But then again, they go after U.S. citizens, their cell phone records, their computers. What's this all about?
Well, there is hypocrisy and a double standard, but I think the real double standard is Hillary Clinton is out there today posturing about internet freedom, whereas the head of her regime, Obama, has demanded and presumably received the ability to turn off the internet in the United States. What Mubarak did in self-defense is what Obama can now do. That's the big hypocrisy. Hillary gives these speeches about once a year now, right? So she's out there announcing that the U.S. government is interfering in internal affairs of countries. So far, they're tweeting, State Department guys are tweeting, in English, French, and Spanish. They've added Arabic and Farsi, so they're going big in Persian language into Iran, and they're adding Chinese, Russian, and Hindi, so all those other targets that opened up. And she also announced, she says it's a venture capital approach, with 25 million on top of the 20 million they had already given out to people like Falun Gong to find a way to break the Great Wall of China, which is the thing that they're targeting.
And that's so interesting because, you know, you talk about the U.S. using the internet to either work with these other countries. But a lot of leaders, a lot of people are looking at this and saying, hey, wait a minute. Maybe the U.S. should step back a little bit, including to earlier today a suggestion by Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. He said that the U.S. and Western allies should not use, for example, Egypt and Tunisia, which use the internet, but they shouldn't use these revolutions to try to stir up democracy and protests in the Middle East, that they should instead, you know, back off. I'll play you what he said.
We are convinced that calls for revolutions are counterproductive. We've had more than one revolution in Russia, and we believe that we don't need to impose revolutions on others. We don't think that we can tighten the screws or take sides.
So clearly the U.S. has not gotten this message. You were just talking about this. No. They just launched this new website, or they just launched a new Twitter website in Farsi. I want to show you real quick a couple of tweets that they showed. They said, you know, tweet, we want to join in your conversation. They said, U.S. calls on Iran to allow people to enjoy same universal rights to peacefully assemble to demonstrate, just like in Cairo. Talk about this.
They support all revolutions but the one here. The thing that Hillary Clinton talked about is digital activists. In other words, there's a youth bulge around the world. They want to mobilize these people. I think what she's got in mind is a secret army of hackers and indeed trolls that will be the shock and awe of the new decade. And this is what they were able to deploy in Egypt. It's simple. You get the rich kids using Facebook and Twitter. You get the rich kids into the square. You put that on television. You convince the rest of the society that the government is deeply unpopular, and the revolution takes off. It's a way to con, manipulate, and dupe an entire society. And this is what a color revolution or CIA people power coup or postmodern coup actually is.
Let's switch gears now and go to across the river to federal court. U.S. prosecutors today asked a federal judge for Twitter records associated with WikiLeaks, associated with, you know, Julian Assange, Bradley Manning, you know, and another supporter. Do you think Americans care about this hypocrisy going on here?
Well, look, I would say, first of all, I condemn the Department of Justice for harassing these people and trying to chill free speech. But on the other side, we're dealing here with a CIA limited hangout, a self-exposure operation in the form of WikiLeaks. This is Assange is now the Justin Bieber for a whole generation of nihilists around the world that are the shock troops in this U.S.-steered attack on the nation state in favor of the empire across the world. What he's been doing is putting out very carefully selected and indeed doctored stuff that attacks who? Not the U.S., not the British, not the Israelis, but Ben Ali, Berlusconi, Putin, Gaddafi, the president of Argentina, Karzai. In other words, the whole CIA enemies list.
Well, I think it also puts some information out there that the U.S. government clearly didn't want out there.
That everybody knew. That everybody knew. Let me just point to one thing. Cass Sunstein in 2008 said, it's time for the cognitive infiltration of anti-government movements. WikiLeaks is the Cass Sunstein cognitive infiltration that was planned, and it's doing that job.
All right, investigative journalist Webster Tarpley. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but thanks for weighing in.
So there you have it. Hillary announces expanded U.S. cyber coup campaign. Meanwhile, further down the DEFCON list of headlines from the Los Angeles Times, U.S. intelligence officials concerned about cyber attack. Meanwhile, kill switch internet bill alarms privacy experts. More on that from USA Today. Cyber war issues likely to be addressed only after a catastrophe. That's from Threat Level, and that's usually how we like to roll here in the United States. Meanwhile, FEMA has lost all their official lesson reports on Katrina, floods, fires, and more. That's from Federal Computer Week. Fed sees 18 more domains in their ongoing so-called piracy crackdown. They also announce a significant new wiretap push from DSLReports.com. Backdoors galore in everything from Skype to BitTorrent. Meanwhile, a supposed online do not track bill has been introduced into Congress. That's also from Russia Today. Internet searches beginning to be used as evidence in trials. That's from allgov.com. They're also reporting that the case against Assange, the aforementioned Assange, is slowly dribbling away. Obama and Holder's case against Assange dribbles away. Meanwhile, the Obamasiah yesterday, on the 17th, met with Steve Jobs, Eric Schmidt, and Mark Zuckerberg in San Francisco. Of course, he'll only meet with the big boys. He has no time for us little people. And yes, the Obamasiah is in Oregon today, in Hillsboro, a Portland suburb, checking out Intel's manufacturing plant, largest private employer here in Oregon with some 15,000 employees. Again, has no interest in the little guy. And just as a reminder, as long as we're talking about all those big tech firms, just another piece for the puzzle. Again, reiterating what we already know. Facebook and Google are essentially CIA fronts. When you look at their backgrounds, when you look at when you look at all of those things, InQtel, the private investment firm, they gave them the startup capital. Furthermore, on cyberspace war, as we get somewhat distracted, we don't want to go down the WikiLeaks rabbit hole. But here it is again, and we'll close it out. References to things of a speculative nature. WikiLeaks confirms Billy Meyer on Peak Oil. Billy Meyer, supposed contactee. Contactee of what? Well, of course, spacemen. San Bruno gas explosion. You won't read about it in the mainstream media. Sandra Hart writes an explosive article at the aforementioned Henry Mayhew's website. That's where the reminder that CIA funded Facebook and Google. Consumer advocate target of San Bruno explosion. You may have read who died near the blast epicenter back in September 2010, a mother and her 13-year-old daughter. What you didn't learn was the woman's profession and her efforts to oppose an unjustified rate hike. Jacqueline Grieg worked for the California Public Utilities Commission as a lead analyst or lead analyst in their natural gas section of Division of Rate Payers. Grieg's job was to defend the consumer from paying exorbitant rates for their natural gas. Hart, in the article, asks the unthinkable. What are the odds that Jacqueline Grieg, a whistleblower advocating for customers of PG&E, was at home in San Bruno at the epicenter of the explosion and died that day along with her daughter? Is this a Silkwood-type situation? Our last post on cyberspacewar.com, the X-37B. What's behind those closed payload doors? What kind of payload does the unmanned X-37B carry? There has been much controversy, and we have been covering the secret space plane for the past several months here. Allegations, the mini shuttle is designed to attack satellites, and a space travel article by Morris Jones asked good questions about the mysterious craft and its run-up to its second flight. What's behind the doors of the X-37B? We'll have to leave that question right there, my friends, as we jump to just a couple of quick posts from my newest site in the kingdom, holyhexes.com. From the Daily Mail, a story, again, as I said a little bit ago, the great thing of now having extra folks help post and edit for the sites in the Media Monarchy Kingdom is I get to learn things, such as this case on holyhexes.com. Scientists finally work out the age of the mystery manuscript. The bizarre sequence of symbols, charts, and figures have baffled the world of science for the last 100 years, but now, thanks to carbon dating, researchers have finally begun to pick apart the secrets of the Voynich manuscript. V-O-Y-N-I-C-H, the Voynich manuscript, the most alien artifact of its kind in the world. They've been able to determine for the first time that it was written in the early 15th century, more than 100 years earlier than previously thought. And while they're no closer to understanding what the complex text actually means, putting a date on it takes them a huge step closer to discovering what it's really about. What is known sounds like the plot from a film and makes the Da Vinci Code pale by comparison. The manuscript was discovered by a rare book dealer named Wilfred Voynich in the Villa Mondragon near Rome in 1912 as he was trawling through a chest of books. Scientists finally working out the age of this Voynich manuscript, and I did get a comment, as most of my posts spill out onto facebook.com/Media Monarchy at some point. Someone commented and said they'd been fascinated by the Voynich manuscript for years. So again, this is how I think the collaboration of things can work, is that we can all teach each other things. I know it sounds very pretty simple, but maybe that's something to learn every day. Our last bit on Holy Hexes is the list of headlines. The February 17th Papa Culture Bible School Book of Mormon Hook'em Horns. We'll kick it off, and we have a photo from the documentary Jesus Camp, just as a way to, of course, poke fun while edutaining. Kentucky passes bill to teach the Bible in public schools.
It's the foundation of the Christian faith. Now State Senator Joe Bowen wants Kentucky public school students to have an opportunity to take classes about the Bible.
No doubt about it, the most important book ever written. And obviously it's had so much influence on our society and all of Western civilization.
Just last year, former State Senator David Boswell introduced the same bill. It passed the Senate but died in the House. Bowen defeated Boswell last November. Now he, too, passed the same bill out of the Senate, even though Bowen admits there's nothing preventing Kentucky public schools from teaching Bible classes now.
There's not, but this provides the roadmap. Okay, so this sets the foundation.
Last year, when his Democratic colleague David Boswell introduced the bill, State Senator Tim Shaughnessy voted for it. This year, when Bowen, a Republican, introduced it, Shaughnessy didn't vote on it.
I didn't read it as closely as I should have. I spent a little more time looking into it.
Shaughnessy specifically says a provision allowing students to substitute their own text for the course throws academic credibility out the window. State Representative Reggie Meeks has a harsher view of the bill.
Hey, come on now. This is politics. This is a political year.
Meeks believes the Senate, with its 34-1 vote in favor of the measure, is pandering to Kentucky's Christian voters.
It's like waving meat in front of a dog, okay? You give them what they want.
But what this bill provides for is a social studies course. You know, it's education. It's not indoctrination.
I suspect that it will not make it out of the House this year either.
We know that that's an obstacle.
Kentucky bill to teach Bible in public schools. On down the list of pop culture headlines on holyhexes.com, the elite foundation funded mediamatters.org asking the question, who is Joel Richardson? He's been Glenn Beck's go-to end times prophet more and more as time goes by. And further down the list from the New York Times, the Book of Mormon is a musical coming from the South Park boys, Trey Parker and Matt Stone, coming soon, The Book of Mormon, and you do at least have to give it to Parker and Stone. There's nothing they won't skewer, including, unfortunately, things like 9/11 truth. But on down the list from Examiner.com, Sarah Palin's too close to Scientology lobby to actually oppose it, getting into who's connected to the celebrity cult that we went over pretty extensively last week on episode 205. Jacksonville.com, an article just from their local entertainment section, gets into hand horns, the story behind the popular rock concert gesture. Is it Aleister Crowley? Was it Ronnie James Dio of Black Sabbath? Or is it much, much more than that? You won't get the much, much more out of this article, but again, is where kind of building holyhexes.com, just trying to gather the interesting occult news. And of course, when you start to save feeds for things like occult and Satanism and those kind of things, these are the stories we're getting just through the massive deluge, the drinking from a water hose, or a fire hose, rather. But you'll see this gesture all over the place. You can even actually see it on Laura Logan's Wikipedia page, the CBS reporter who was assaulted in Cairo, and we're going to get into that on the upcoming episode 206. GodDiscussion.com discusses the alleged cult in New Mexico, worrying parents and families. And lastly, from a site called GhostTheory.com, they posted up the Discovery Channel's most evil cult leaders. And that's where we'll leave it on HolyHexes.com. And just grab one post from FoodWorldOrder.com, the February 17th Binge and Purge, Cola Wars, Polar Bears, and DIY Labeling. I said DIY to a customer at the store the other day, and she said, what? I'd say, do it yourself. Coca-Cola's secret recipe finally spills out into the public?
Guarded like a state secret, or the formula for life-saving medicine, the original recipe for Coca-Cola has been under lock and key for 125 years, one of the most jealously guarded trade secrets in the world. But now, the secret formula for the world-famous sugary soft drink is public, thanks to a radio program, This American Life. Show producers came across an article from 1979 in Coke's hometown newspaper, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and along with it, a photo showing a handwritten copy of the original recipe by John Pemberton from 1886.
I feel like we made this discovery, but I feel like what we found was just hiding in plain sight for anybody to find. And that, to us, was the interesting thing about it.
The first recipe called for cocaine, but over time, the narcotic ingredient was removed, but not the secrecy.
With secret recipe in hand, the radio show hired a soda and flavor company to replicate the unique flavor of Coca-Cola. A few people in a taste test couldn't tell the difference between the real thing and their copy, but the staff of the radio show, they called their version a failure.
That's mainly because one of the ingredients is a tough nut to crack, but not the coconut. In the recipe, there's an ingredient called Merchandise 7X Flavoring. There's a list of what makes up this secret 7X flavoring, but the trick is how they are mixed together. It's been said that the Coca-Cola company at any given time only has two people who can properly mix a batch of 7X. And they say their coveted recipe has not been leaked, and it seems to be confirmed by the majority of those who tasted the batch brewed up by the radio show staff. Scott Heidler, Al Jazeera, New York.
Can't feel the beating. Coca-Cola's secret recipe, yeah, maybe doesn't exactly spill out into the public. But for more on this story, we'll hop to naturalnews.com. The caramel coloring used to color all the top cola brands isn't natural caramel coloring at all. Instead, it's made by reacting sugars with ammonia and sulfites at high temperatures. This reaction results in the formation of two things I'm not going to attempt to pronounce, but they have meth in them, both of which are chemicals documented by the U.S. government to cause cancer in mammals. This is all coming to light thanks to an effort by CSPI, that's the Center for Science in the Public Interest, which has now filed a regulatory petition to ban these chemicals from colas. The National Toxicology Program conducted animal studies on these toxic chemicals found in colas, concluding there is clear evidence that these formations are animal carcinogens. So, of course, there's no such thing as a perfectly safe soda. We'll close out the soda wars with a story from the Houston Chronicle. Now, again, as all of this is spilling out, docs are wondering if diet soda and strokes are linked. Diet soda, of course, filled with aspartame, brought to you by folks like Rumsfeld and Searle, and eugenics, and the front men in the service of the elite-funded eugenics. But this also perhaps sheds a light, again, on something we're going to go over in the upcoming episode 206, and that would be the bizarre clip of the other CBS reporter on the night of the Grammys babbling gibberish into the camera, and people wondered if she was having a stroke. It's a pretty safe bet that she probably drinks tons of diet soda. That's just speculation on my behalf and the rest of foodworldorder.com. Farmers rushing to deposit seeds in the Arctic Doomsday Vault, where it's 4 degrees below Fahrenheit and patrolled by polar bears. AOLnews.com getting into the Svalbard seed vault. Why would they do it if they didn't know something was up? But back here in Oregon, a new bill would exempt small farmers from inspection. This is covered on foodpoisonjournal.com, and they cast a very skeptical eye to this. In a way, like so many outlets, they do such good work on one hand, but then toe the party line in so many other ways. But our last bit from organicconsumers.org, DIY labels show grocers how to label their GMOs and factory-farmed products. This is a nice little post that actually you can download a PDF, and they even tell you what size Avery, you know, office file label stickers they will print out on, and you can go into a grocery store and label, oh no, GMO, millionsagainstmonsanto.org. So that's all the alternative news in the media monarchy kingdom. And again, my friends, I appreciate all your help so much in all the ways that all the folks out there help out MediaMonarchy.com. Again, your support helps keep this site and show going and growing. So this has been the B-Side, episode 205 for February 18th, 2011. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. We're going to go out staying on the Cola Wars theme. It's the clash with Coca-Cola. And of course, my friends, as always, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
It's in the gleaming corridor on the 51st floor. The money can be made if you really want some more. Executive decision made with critical precision. Matching wall and pose for a silicone nose. Coca's life to the advertising world. Coca's life to the party girl. Coca's life where there isn't any. Coca's life. It's a pause and refreshes in the corridors of power. A top man needs a top album before the happy hour. Crushed with steaks in food and an alligator boot. No need to launderette, you can send them to the bed. The Coca's life to the advertising world. Coca's life to the party girl. Coca's life where there isn't any. Coca's life. Corridor on the 51st floor where money can be made if you really want some more. Executive decision with a clinical precision. Your matching wall and clothes and a silicone nose. Coca's life to the advertising world. Coca's life to the party girl. Coca's life where there isn't any. Coca's life.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
Tall remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say about on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
Yep. This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.